Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name is Josh, and I'm an entrepreneur traveling around Orlando trying to find the best entrepreneurs, founders, and those who support the entrepreneurial community, like investors and venture capitalists, private equity guys, and just bring their knowledge and wisdom to the community so that we could learn together and grow Orlando as a great hub for Orlando entrepreneurs. Or for entrepreneurs, right? So on today's show, we're gonna have a conversation with Jeff, who's the CEO and founder of a company called Rep Scrubs. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Josh. Glad to be here.
Yeah, this is really cool. So why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Okay. Well, again, I'm Jeff, and I spent most of my career in large corporate America. I was the national sales director for a company called Stryker. I was there for 25 years. And so I wore a suit for most of my career, enjoyed it, but I play in the surgical arena, hospital supplies, surgical supplies. Rep Scrubs basically is the organization which I founded back in 2013. The company name is focused on more or less what we do in the operating room. So rep refers to a surgical sales rep, and scrubs refers to surgical scrubs, hence rep scrubs. And what most people in the general public don't realize is when they see an individual wearing greens or blues, meaning surgical scrubs, and they're in Starbucks or they're in a hotel or the airport or so forth, usually those are not doctors or nurses. Those are actually surgical sales reps. Most people are not aware that in, depending on the procedure, either 40% or as with orthopedics, over 80% of all surgical procedures actually have a device rep, a surgical sales rep in the operating room during the procedure. So again, those people that you might see out and about in public, those are one of the over 500,000 surgical sales reps out in the community.
So the uniforms that they're wearing, the scrubs, right? We might see them and associate them to be a doctor, a nurse, someone like actually doing the procedure, but they actually might be a sales representative to bring in their devices and to show the doctors what to do or what to use for that surgery. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay. So why is that an issue? So you're seeing these people in Starbucks or in the grocery store or heck, mowing their lawn or something. You see them wearing these scrubs. Why is that an issue?
Well, the primary issue is the fact that surgical scrubs are supposed to stay contained in the operating room itself. You're supposed to take them off when you leave, and you're supposed to put on fresh, clean scrubs before you go into a surgical procedure, because you're entering a sterile environment. The problem is the reps, for convenience sake and to help streamline their ability to be able to gain access to the OR, will wear the same set of scrubs that they have as their personal set. They'll get up in the morning, they'll put them on, they'll wear them throughout the course of the day, they'll stop at Starbucks, whatever, and they're not changing into clean scrubs before they actually enter a surgical procedure. So they're contaminating the OR. And that's a patient risk, that's an infection risk, and that is a big focus today for all the hospitals, is to control what they call HAIs, hospital-acquired infections.
Wow. So the reps or people who are wearing the scrubs at the coffee shop, they could bring the contaminants from the outside world into a sterile environment. So why people are getting their husbands, wives, children's operated on, people might be bringing in infectious diseases or germs into that sterile environment.
That's correct. I mean, if a rep is going from one hospital to another throughout the course of his day, it's a little bit different than a surgeon's or a nurse, because that rep is cross-contaminating from one hospital to another. It's also a threat to the public, because someone wearing contaminated scrubs going into a restaurant is bringing whatever he picks up in the OR or in the hospital outside as a public safety issue. So it's many studies have found that scrubs are a major contaminant, a carrier of pathogens. And some of the worst pathogens are found in the hospital. They're not found out in the general public. So you've got things like C. diff, MRSA, VRE. These are antibiotic-resistant pathogens that are commonly found in hospitals. And there have been studies that have shown that a nurse in the operating room, after a standard 8-hour shift, is going to have gram-positive pathogens on her scrubs at the end of that 8-hour shift, and that's C. diff, MRSA, or VRE. So interesting thing about these particular pathogens is they form themselves into what they call isolates. So it's kind of like a possum. They have a hard outer shell, and when they get into a warm and moist environment, that's when they bloom. So these pathogens or isolates from C. diff, MRSA, VRE, for example, will live on scrubs for up to 50 days. And you can't kill these pathogens unless you launder them over 160 degrees with decontaminants. So the problem is that after laundering them at home, over 40% of the scrubs laundered at 120 degrees in a home laundry machine were still contaminated.
Wow.
So this is the problem. These pathogens are extremely resilient. They'll live for a long time on soft fabrics, and they can be carried around. So not only do they become a public danger, but obviously as an individual travels around from hospital to hospital, they're cross-contaminating different hospital or environments.
So you started noticing this when you were in medical sales at Stryker. You started to notice that this pattern, right? People come in, do their thing, come out, and then they go to the next hospital, right? So what does Rep Scrubs and what do you do to fix that problem that we're seeing? People bringing contaminants into the hospital and then bringing them out in the hospital into the public and then into other hospitals. Like, what do you guys do to fix that problem?
Well, what we noticed is that there is this trend across the entire marketplace. It's not isolated to any one company. Every hospital has a policy to control what is worn when you enter a restricted or semi-restricted area where scrubs are required. But it's enforcing those policies that are very difficult to do, especially with an outside individual who's not an employee of the hospital. These are third-party vendors who come in, and they carry a very significant value to not only the staff in the OR or the cath lab, but also to the surgeon and to the patient. So there's a dynamic value that they provide. But we've recognized when we looked at the entire industry, and we have people involved in our company from all the major companies, Smith Nephew, Intuitive, Stryker. We have a great leadership team here with over 150 years of experience in this field.
Oh, wow.
And what we recognized is that there's an industry pattern here that's happening across the whole network, and that is the hospitals are struggling to get control of their ORs because there is a lot of promotion, there's a lot of sales reps out there, and again, it's become difficult to manage. So we set up a platform, and we're the only platform in the industry right now that does this, is we set up a dispensary in the OR where every rep who comes into the hospital checks in to our what we call a scrub port, and they can actually dispense and purchase a set of disposable scrubs, which are clean. They're dispensed on site, so we know that they haven't come in from the street. It's a shirt, a pants, hat, and shoe covers. It's a full surgical outfit, and they'll wear this in the OR. It has a badge on it that identifies the rep from a security standpoint, so we know who his name is. We know exactly what company he works for, and then that badge actually expires. It turns red and says expired after 8 hours. So now we know those same set of scrubs can't be worn over and over again. And every hospital that utilizes the Rep Scrubs program has a different color badge so that they know that this representative actually vended those scrubs on campus at their particular scrub port. We've also generated a lot of data for the hospitals. So it'll document for regulatory agencies like CMS and Joint Commission showing exactly who is in the OR at any given time. and it'll actually give them a printout and alerts so they know who's entering and gaining access to a restricted area, and they'll also be ensured that that individual is wearing the appropriate garments.
So this is a really great idea that really helps the hospital protect their patients, right?
Without question.
How did you come up with this idea? How did this idea form? So here we are, 2019. You said you started this in 2013. Talk to us about the journey from going from being a scrub wearer yourself to now almost creating like a vending machine for scrubs.
Yeah, it's I guess you'd call it the typical entrepreneur, you know, bar napkin type story. I was up in New York visiting family. That's where I was raised. And sitting at a bar with my brother in a sports bar having a hamburger and a beer, and a friend came up who I haven't seen in 25 years, tapped me on the shoulder, and we embraced, and he asked me what I was doing. I asked him what he was doing. He's actually an administrator at a very large hospital in New York, and I was working as a national sales director and had 25 years at one of the bigger device companies. And he began to explain the problem that he had, that he knew that vendors were coming and going, and they had some concerns about the risk of infection. And so he went and bought silver scrubs with vendor written down the leg, so they would look like inmates. He said, "I sucked the cool right out of wearing scrubs around town."
Yeah.
And he said, unfortunately, a couple of weeks later, trying to identify and create some transparency in terms of who's a doctor and who's a vendor, so that you know who is who in the hospital, which is a great value to the platform. He said he looked out his window about 3-4 weeks later at 7 in the morning, and there were a couple of reps getting out of their cars in the parking lot wearing his inmate scrubs, if you will, the way he had designed them. So he went down to the OR and he watched them just kind of walk right past him and go into surgery wearing those same scrubs. So he realized he hadn't solved the problem. He then went and said, okay, let's scrap that. Let's just buy boxes or cases of disposable scrubs. And it ended up costing him over $100,000 in the course of a year. So his point to me was, I need help controlling what you guys do. You bring value as device reps, but I need more controls to be able to monitor and who's gaining access and what they're wearing. And he said, I've spent $100,000 on disposable scrubs. Why is it my cost? Why isn't it your cost of doing business at my hospital? So he said, it'd be nice if we can get the reps to pay for their own scrubs. And that was it. We sat there and we pulled out a napkin and we figured, you know, a vending machine might do this, but it can't be cash because we need to restrict who actually has access to these scrubs. And we developed this idea about a membership and registering online and becoming a member and being validated as a device rep. And now it's a cashless web-based system that dispenses scrubs. The badge really was a great addition to the platform. And it took about 2 years. I had left Stryker Corporation, and it took about 2 years of development. My wife often said, I don't know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah.
But
God bless the entrepreneurs' partners, huh?
You know, it's the thing that I really respect about the entrepreneurial spirit is there are a lot of people, I'm sure, who have that quest and that goal to step out of these big corporate roles and roll the dice because there's something they believe in. And it takes a tremendous amount of courage. And, you know, when you first make that decision, courage becomes desperation because you really have to, you have to stick with it. You have to maintain that end goal in your mind. And it took 2 years of acquiring patents. We have 3 patents now, so we have our IP around it. It took aligning myself with great mentors who understood the environment from a legal and finance perspective, and was able to bring tremendous talent to the table who saw the vision that I did. And now we're, after literally only 3.5 years in the marketplace, we launched in mid-2015 after doing some beta site studies. We're a national organization. We have over 150 of the biggest and most influential health facilities across the country, such as Jackson Health and Temple and Holy Cross and Emory University and John Hopkins and Barnes Jewish and Mount Sinai, New York. I mean, we're the change agents in the industry, and we're giving back control to hospital administration of who comes and goes in their restricted areas. And we're proud of it.
So I love what you said. Courage becomes desperation. When you took the leap, right? So it started out over beer, which all great ideas start from beer, scotch, or coffee, right? Those are the liquids that create courage. What was your conversation with your wife or in your brain before you took that leap to say, I'm quitting to I'm starting? What happened there?
Yeah, it's kind of like a rebirth, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. It's scary sometimes.
I had spent over 34 years in the medical industry working for companies like Bristol and a company called Storz, and then into Stryker. So I was educated by great mentors. These were great companies to work for. And after you spend that kind of time and you get to a certain point in your career, you say, I really want to make a difference. And I think everybody really has that kind of dream or aspiration is, that, you know, I want to make a bigger difference in the world so that I can do something that my kids, and that was a great motivation for me, my kids would be proud of what I accomplished. That was a real headstrong thing to me. I had passed 50 years old and I was thinking, you know, if there's ever a time to do it, I better do it now. And it had been a dream for many years, but people get comfortable in corporate jobs. So the idea was brought to me, and as I said, I sat down with this friend of mine, and I figured, you know, if now's the time. And again, it takes bravery to step away. And you do that, and a month goes by, and then 3 months goes by, and then 10 months goes by, and you're diligently working on this, and you can spend 16, 18 hours a day.
Yeah.
Sitting in a chair. I mean, my wife would come in, and my hair would be standing straight up. I'm still wearing my boxers from the night before, and it's 6:30 p.m., and she's like, did you even get a glass of water today? Did you move away from that desk? And that's the kind of focus it takes. Again, I tip my hat to all successful entrepreneurs because it is a dedication to a concept, to an idea. And then, you know, look, there are a lot of great ideas out there, but no idea becomes successful unless you have execution. Yeah. And that's when I talk about desperation, because you're brave to make that step. I commend everybody who's done that. But once the months begin to pass and you're in that development phase, it becomes the desperation that you've dedicated so much up to that point. It becomes this element of, it's got to work. You know, it becomes, that desperation is a great motivator.
So Jeff, you are 2 years into beta, 2 years into acquiring patents and doing this. When did it become desperate for you? Like, when did it switch over from, oh, cool, I'm a startup entrepreneur, to, well, should I need to make this work?
I think it became desperation probably after about 8 months, when I realized that I had made the leap. You begin to realize, okay, where's my health insurance? Where's my where's my big paycheck?
Where's the money coming from, right?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of, again, those are the comfort factors of being in corporate America, working for somebody else. It became desperation, I would say, around that time frame of 8 months, where you realize, I've put so much into this, there's no going back. And that's when you come to that realization that there's no going back, that's when it turns to desperation. And, you know, desperation is not panic. Desperation is motivation. And you become that much more focused. A lot of people tell you, look, just go back and do what you were doing. Go back and write a resume and go get another job, and you can make great money and you've got a lot of great experience. But you have to stay focused. A lot of people will tell you it's not going to work, but if you, that desperation piece, and you realize how much you've invested into this, it's the desperation to make it work, the motivation.
So one of your trusted friends, mentors, advisors, someone that you knew for a long time looked at you and said, Jeff, this isn't going to work. You need to go get a job again. All right. Did that ever happen?
Yeah, actually it did. There were several people who told me.
Several people.
Yeah.
Walk us through what happens in an entrepreneur's mind when that happens. If you're comfortable sharing that.
Yeah.
If not, just say no.
No, I mean, look, you know, I'm trying to reel back in my mind to exact moments. You start to develop spreadsheets and you try and take what it is that you have as a concept and put it on paper. And one of the first essential pieces is trying to show that it makes sense, that there's a business that can be developed from this as opposed to it just being a great idea. What's your revenue like? What's your P&L going to look like? What's the market acceptance? How do you scale it? How do you do all those things that turn it from an idea to a business? And that's where a lot of people are going to say you're going to struggle. And that's where you have to go to mentors and ask them the right questions.
Yeah.
You have to learn the financial piece, understand the P&L, go to your suppliers and get them bought into what you're doing. And not only will it be successful for your company, but it'll be successful for their company. You ask for their loyalty. And we were fortunate enough to have that. So, you know, look, there are a lot of people who told me it's not going to work.
Did that fuel the fire? Did that like make you want it even more?
Yeah, there's a competitive spirit that sort of kicks in, and you have to go back to why you were initially did the deed.
Yeah.
Why did you start this? And you have to know before you pull the plug on what makes you comfortable right now, you have to know those kinds of speed bumps are going to be there. People are going to tell you it won't work. But a lot of people also said, number one, had no idea there was this going on in the marketplace, that a rep is actually in surgery. And is it possible that that person may not be in clean scrubs? And it creates a little bit of shock and awe for the average individual, the layperson out there, who's not familiar with hospital and surgical environment and so forth. So their reaction to it was motivating to me.
Yeah.
And also the people who understood that were in the device world and knew what was going on said, man, I really don't like you because you're making me pay for my scrubs.
So there was a cost to them.
Yes, we transitioned the cost off of the hospital's balance sheet and onto the rep's balance sheet. So when the rep goes up to the scrub port, he has an account. And when he plugs his member number and ID,
cha-ching,
it basically is a declining balance. So
yeah.
It's almost like E-Pass in the toll system.
Yeah.
You put in $50, and every time you go through the toll, it's a declining balance. Same concept with rep scrubs. So it's a cashless model. It transitioned the costs over from the hospital to the vendor, and now they're participating in their business cost.
And now that is
the business opportunity, I should say.
Yeah, that's a cost of doing business. Like when I go and do whatever, anytime I've ever been in business, I had to pay for my own uniform, right, to go in. Did you meet resistance from, you know, medical device companies, surgical reps? Did you meet any resistance from them because this was an additional cost to them?
Yeah,
for doing business.
Oh, without question. I would say about 75% to 80% of the reps out there are actually on an expense report from their companies. So they're assisted. There are other independent distributors out there who are, if you will, have some of the greatest financial opportunities because they're running as independents. But the cost comes directly out of their pocket, and they're the ones who are the most challenging, if you will, to deal with. And look, we can understand, but the focus is number one. This is a standard cost of doing business. The med device world is one of the most elite sales roles in the economy, realistically. I mean, the average, I think if the average device rep is is it making a very good living. Let's just put it that way. So being the fact that they're in a very sensitive environment, and this equates to a cup of coffee at Starbucks in terms of cost, it's a cost of doing business, and it's enhancing patient safety, which should be their objective. And it's overall an assistance and a step in towards partnershiping, establishing a partnership with the hospital.
Now, are there any benefits to the independent sales reps, or the surgical device? Is there a benefit for them being able to get these there, and you know, instead of bringing them home every day? Is there a benefit to the reps?
Oh, without question. Like I said, C. diff, MRSA, VRE, which most of them are not necessarily trained to know, these pathogens, which are deadly, you're bringing them home to your kids.
And washing them in the same clothes that you're washing your baby's clothes in. So you're watching your scrubs, if you're a rep out there, with your baby's clothes. And you said, I'm trying to remember numbers, 120 degrees is the...
It's typical hot water heater, if you will,
at your house.
At a home, yes.
And what does it take to actually kill these diseases?
It's over 160 degrees with bleach and other agents. So it needs to be laundered commercially, which is now what the Association of Operating Room Nurses, which is one of the regulatory associations out there that sets standards for the operating room and for sterile environments, they're saying home laundering is not really acceptable.
So
these scrubs are being home laundered when they wake up, put them on, and travel throughout their day.
Wow. This is crazy because, you know, I used to be in the medical field, and I used to wash my clothes. I was a firefighter, paramedic. I used to wash my clothes in the same clothes I was washing my family's clothes in. And then I would go to Starbucks or whatever, but I see the reps wearing, I see some doctor, you know, and all these things. Wow, I didn't know that there was that big of a problem in this world. And you're looking to fix that problem. So over the past, you started in 2013, kind of really hit the market in 2015. What kind of impact do you think you've made, or because you said you really wanted to create an impact. Like you talked about all these great organizations. Like, have you gotten any feedback from the hospitals or from the staff or from the patients? Have you gotten any feedback or any testimonials or success stories that really inspire you to keep going?
Yeah, without question. The customer satisfaction level that we're hearing from our customers is off the charts. And that's that gratification piece. That's what makes you sit back and understand that, you know what, I am making a difference, and we are making a change, and for the better. So we've had almost every one of our accounts come back and say, look, we have more control over who's coming and going. We've actually seen a 20% reduction in vendor traffic, and traffic in the operating room in restricted areas of the hospital where street clothes are not allowed. As you can imagine, they're sensitive areas, and people coming and going is not a good thing.
No.
It's directly tied in multiple studies to infection rates. So by dropping the amount of traffic coming and going out of an operating room is helping them get maintain control and improve their infection prevention efforts. They're saying they're more efficient. Now they don't have to have a staff member trying to monitor who's coming and going and also handing out scrubs to those reps. Many hospitals have said they're as much as 60% to 70% more efficient with individual staff members. So now a nurse trained to do more involved things related to patient care, they don't have that individual sitting behind a desk handing out scrubs to reps and taking driver's licenses and keys in exchange, which is typically how they would try and do it.
Wow. So instead of needing a nurse to be a security guard, that nurse could actually focus on healthcare and what they're trained and probably passionate about doing.
You got it. The documentation helps them a lot as well. Now Joint Commission and some of these regulatory bodies are saying, okay, who is in your operating room right now? And most of the hospitals don't know who's actually in the operating room at any given time, unless they have a clipboard or some other sign-in type mechanism. With the Rep Scrubs program, not only are we ensuring that the reps look different in their particular scrubs, not only are we ensuring that they're wearing clean scrubs, But we're documenting everything. Everything's web-based. So as soon as somebody checks into the scrub port, they get a text and it says, Jeff Foyer from Rep Scrubs has just gained access to your OR. And at the end of the day, there's a full printout. So this is live tracking as well as historical. So they know at any given time who was in their OR, and they have the assurance that that person is wearing clean scrubs and adhering to a sterile protocol.
So this is actually not only for infectious disease to reduce the rate of that and to eliminate it, but it also is a security issue where they're seeing who's coming in and what they're doing. It's keeping their eyes on protecting their patients and their staff.
Without question. Security has been a very big variable for hospitals to get their arms around. Nobody can get a set of scrubs unless they are a registered member with Rep Scrubs. And again, they're transparent. You know who a rep is, an outside third party contractor or vendor, versus who is an employee or a staff member. We also give them a red bouffant cap, the surgical cap, if you will. And being red, it makes that rep stand out. Our scrubs are also silk screened, so it says Rep Scrubs on it, and they have that large badge on their chest that's 2x5 that identifies the rep and the company he's working for and the time and the date of which he vended, along with the name of the hospital. So there is a tremendous amount of documentation that the hospital can utilize, not only identifying who that person is through the badge and the scrubs, knowing they're not a surgeon or they're not a nurse or a staff member, but they're actually a vendor or a contractor. But they have a running history for some of the regulatory bodies like Joint Commission.
So take us back to when you went to market. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about your first sale. How did you get your first sale?
Well, it was a lot of begging and pleading.
Yeah.
Went down to Memorial.
That's the desperation, right?
Yeah. We realized that we had built something that was very functional. The software took us about $200,000 investing in software and machines and printers and everything else. And then we brought the concept to Memorial Health System down in Hollywood. I had some relationships there from my days prior. And they understood the concept. They understood the value. And they opened the doors and said, we'd really like to give this a shot because we see the value in it. We spent about 6 months basically going through betas, and we were very fortunate. We did enough testing prior to ensure that it was successful. We wanted to make sure this was easy for the vendors, the reps. We wanted to make sure that this made their life easier to gain access. We wanted to make sure that the platform did not stutter, that when they went to the scrub port, that it would dispense a badge and scrubs with an element of dependency, and that the reporting was correct. And there's a lot involved. There's a tremendous amount of connectivity from a software perspective. And it worked well, and then we scaled out through the Memorial Health System, which has 5 different hospitals. And then from there, we began to scale out across South Florida. And now we have about 70 to 75% of all hospitals in South Florida are using the Rep Scrub system. So we're really proud of that.
Nice.
Then we launched in New York. And the strategy there from a business perspective was launching in New York and launching in Florida and then trying to connect the two through the Mid-Atlantic.
Yeah.
And that's what we've done today. So when you launch your product into one particular market, obviously you go from 0 to 1, which is the toughest. You're selling a concept and you got to get somebody to believe in you to give you that opportunity to prove that there's a value proposition to what you're doing. And then what happens is you get this domino effect. The hospitals are saying, my God, okay, this is going to save us money. This is an enhanced security element. This is ensuring patient safety and infection prevention. It's a no-brainer. Why aren't we doing this? It's free to the hospital. And this is getting the reps to participate in their own business opportunity. So let's do it. And it begins to scale out. One hospital will follow the other. that happened in Florida, that happened in New York, and then we joined in the middle through Philly, Boston, Baltimore, the Carolinas, Georgia, and Florida. And now we're in St. Louis and some of the other areas. So that's the challenging part to building the business nationally, is stay focused and prove you can scale it in one market and then connect the two.
I've got to ask you some questions about money. Now, you said that this is free for the hospitals. Now, I don't know what your machines look like or the dispensaries look like. Is there a cost that is incurred for you to go into a new hospital system and to set up there? And how does that work? And when do you start becoming profitable? Or could you walk us through that? If you're, you know, don't give away too much of the secret sauce, but like, yeah, maybe you could give us some high level on what that looks like.
We take all the risk. There's no question about it. We pay for the dispensing machine. We do not charge the hospital for it, so we bear the cost of that.
So you get them set up for free. Like, hey, we're going to come in here, we're going to do this, totally off your books. We're going to take the risk on that.
Yeah. We're not a high margin company like some of the Goliaths out there. We're trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that we are doing the right thing has allowed us to scale really quickly. So we're not high margin. Again, we provide this service at no charge to the hospitals. We recognize that we do transfer a cost burden onto the rep.
Yeah.
But again, we're creating a benefit for and a safety element for
all
those
parties.
Reps. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it takes us a while to break even with each scrub port. Without question, and we want to target those hospitals that need it the most,
sure,
that have the highest volume of traffic in and out of their operating rooms.
Yeah.
And so it becomes a little bit of a waiting game. I'm going to, again, reiterate, we're not high margin, but with scale comes strong profitability, because once that machine is paid for itself, then you've got a...
It's pure margin.
It's pure profit margin.
Yeah. Yeah. So... what kind of organization like really works well with this program, and who at that organization should, or who, what kind of people at that organization should be listening in and maybe reaching out to you to connect with you?
Well, I would say primarily, you know, the organizations that need this is the hospitals. Mm-hmm. Most of them, again, we're trying to build awareness to rep scrubs.
Yeah.
There's a lot of clinical information out there that talks about C. diff, MRSA, VRE, and the problem, the pathogens that they're dealing with, and just getting them to understand that there is a risk associated with vendors coming and going in and out of the OR and potentially not changing. A lot of them don't recognize this as a problem, because they haven't really had a solution. Without question, this is a value to the hospitals. Just right here in Central Florida, we had one hospital that had a nurse anesthetist that was had a home laundry machine that was a petri dish. It was a Gordonia bronchialis, which is a fungus. It's very rare. So they were able to track back the source, but three different open heart patients attracted this fungus in the OR and came down with postoperative infections from it. And they went through a study to try and find out what the source was. It was a nurse anesthetist who was home laundering her scrubs. They took a swatch from her scrubs. They saw the pathogen. They went to her home, and it was her home laundry machine. It was, as I said, it was a petri dish. And once they changed out the machine, the problem was resolved. So that was the smoking gun that tied contaminated scrubs to an actual surgical site infection. And for someone who wasn't in the sterile field, just someone who was in the operating room at the time.
Wow. So they just being in that room could bring pathogens from the outside in and then spread to other patients.
Without question.
So, yep. So hospitals with ORs and the staff who enter past that OR door, like that is ideal for your program. Who at the hospital kind of makes the decision? Is it chief financial officer? Is it operations? Who do you want to talk to?
We touch points with multiple areas within the hospital. It's risk management, it's infection control, it's the C-suite, it is the OR director, supply chain.
That's a complex sale.
It's a long selling cycle because it's a concept at first when you're stepping into a new MSA. And so this is something that they've not heard of before. They like the concept, but they have to get everybody engaged.
Nice. So you did work in New York. You're doing a lot of work in Fort Lauderdale and Hollywood. And why do you live in Orlando? Like, why did you choose Orlando as a place to build and grow this company and headquartered here?
Well, I've lived in Orlando for many years. I've been here since college. So Orlando is my home. It's a great dynamic city. There's a lot of wonderful business opportunities here. There's great talent. There's great resources. There's just emerging markets from all different industries. So we knew that this was a great place to build an organization. And we chose Samford in particular because it's a growing and improving city, and again, we have access to great talent here. So,
nice.
It's been a pleasure being here.
Jeff, what question should I have asked you that I didn't ask you that you think is important to talk about with the audience?
Well, your audience really is focused around entrepreneurship, and I've learned a lot. I mean, I knew nothing about. I stepped into this completely blind, without question. Being a suit does not prepare you to be an entrepreneur. So that is an elite skill. And so, aside from rep scrubs, which is not the important piece here, it's really talking about what it takes and the bravery, the passion. We talked about all that prior. So I would say, you know, to those out there who are thinking about this, is make sure what you're going to do serves a unique purpose, that it's a need and not a want to have. And if it's a want to have, make sure that what you're doing is better than the rest, if you can be so, and it'll speed your growth to market and your market acceptance. But get great, great mentors. I found that having an attorney and making him my friend.
Yeah, that's a lot cheaper then.
because that can kill you. But it also is absolutely vital to you're doing the right things at the right time. Mm. Great mentorship in terms of financial guidance, legal guidance. Make them advisors in your company. Build a board of advisors. And, you know, don't be shy with even equity in your company.
Because
Give away the equity in measured amounts to those people who are passionate about what you're doing, and it's become smart money. Attorneys, CPAs, these people will get you off the ground a lot faster.
So I think that is phenomenal advice. So can you give us maybe 1 to 5 types of people that you probably want on your board of advisors? You mentioned CPA, attorney. Are there others that you want on your stack?
Without question, a good corporate attorney. You definitely want someone who's very strong from a financial organization perspective. And CPA certainly great help in terms of filing taxes and things of that nature. But get somebody on board as soon as you can who can help you, or like a bookkeeper or a controller, someone who can help you organize the financial aspects of the business. That has been really key. If you're operating out of a shoebox, you're going to find yourself in trouble eventually.
Yeah.
I would say find mentors in the business that have experience in the field that you're dabbling in.
Yeah.
Surround yourself with really intelligent people. And you'll find that if you've got something that's a winning idea that can make a difference, and it's got an element of excitement to it, there's people who are going to rush to your front door.
Yeah.
Just be able to sell your dream. And we've got a number of great people like that around us, and I think that's why we've been able to be successful.
Yeah. Man, this is great. Jeff, where could people go to learn more about you and your organization?
They can go to www.repscrubs.com, R-E-P-S-C-R-U-B-S. There's our website, and it basically talks about our mission and what we do. And I think that's the best way to just get a general understanding of who our company is and what we do.
Awesome. Jeff, this has been a great conversation. I've never heard it put like this. Courage becomes desperation. And I really like your approach to wanting to make an impact, to really doing something that you're passionate about, that your kids are proud about, and all these things to really make this world a safer place from pathogens, man. This is really cool. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, yeah. Josh, I appreciate you coming in and spending some time with us. And, you know, I wish everybody out there that's going to jump into this, be brave. Get desperate, because that's a great motivator, and stay focused. And again, surround yourself with really great people who share the same vision, and it'll work.
Awesome. Well, ladies and gentlemen listening into this show, I hope you've enjoyed this conversation. I encourage you to reach out to Jeff and look at their website and just reach out to him. Let him know that what you heard today was meaningful in your life and it helped impact you somehow. But I'll put all those links in the show notes below for the website and how to connect with Jeff and his team. And if you're out there and you run an organization or you work at a hospital and you feel like this might be a good fit for you and your organization, just reach out to Jeff and have a conversation with our team, see if it's a good fit. So ladies and gentlemen, Orlando, thank you for listening into the show. Hope you're having a lovely day. Drive safely, and we'll talk with you all on the next episode. Goodbye, everyone. We'll see you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.